To quote Thomas Jefferson, a well-informed citizenry is the best defense against tyranny. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we discuss the basics of our constitutional republic and how our freedoms are being seized by public officials, both elected and unelected. I'm Mark DeLuzio, a former candidate for the U.S. Congress and a Gold Star father. Join me as we learn together how we can save this unique experiment that we call America. Hi, Mark DeLuzio, episode 45. This episode is going to kind of talk a lot about things that we've talked about before, but kind of put them together in a different framework. I've chose to title this episode, which is episode 45, in case you're keeping score at home, How They Divide Us, The Marxist Art of Resentment-Based Politics. This is going on today, but before we get into kind of what's going on today, I'd like to take you through a little bit of history, a little bit of review. If you go back on the some of the episodes we had in the past on the Marxist agenda, the Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx, Frederick Engels, those are the guys that wrote the Communist Manifesto. I want to talk to you a little bit about history here and how this all relates to what we're going to talk about as to what's going on today. So let's understand some of the tenets of the Communist Manifesto. And again, I want to say to you that if it's a short read, the Communist Manifesto is like $6 on Amazon, $10 maybe at the most. Get yourself a copy. You can read it in about an hour. You'll get a sense as to what that is all about. And then as you're reading it, I would highly suggest you try to do some parallels as to what you see going on today. And I think you're going to find that almost most of all the 10 planks or tenets of the Communist Manifesto, which are listed in the back, and the whole notion and philosophy of Karl Marx and Frederick Engels, is being played out today in today's politics. Okay, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about this whole business about resentment-based politics and how that's used to divide our country. Okay, so talk a little bit. History. Marx believed that, you know, history is driven by a class struggle. He pitted two groups of people in society. He pitted the bourgeoisie, which he defined as the owners of capital, or believe it or not the even ultra rich, but the middle class, the bourgeoisie, and the proletariats, which were the working class. And his whole thought was that the bourgeoisie were benefiting and taking advantage of the working class, the proletariats, okay? That was this whole notion, and that capitalism was going to continue to divide these two groups between, you know, if you will, you want to call it what they're saying today, the rich and the poor, right? The working class, and you see all the attacks on billionaires, okay, today, and the millionaires, and the billionaires, and I guess we can't talk about millionaires anymore because so many people in Congress have become millionaires on $175,000 salary. And that's maybe a episode for another day, because I know quite a bit about how that happens. But he wanted to create what's called a classless society, and that the proletariats, the working class, would be the people that would overthrow the bourgeoisie. Okay. And they would create this communist classless society. He wanted what he called a dictatorship of the proletariats. Now, page ahead a little bit, when Lenin enacted the Communist Manifesto, he wiped out the proletariats. And I'll talk more about that a little bit later. They all got murdered. They all got exterminated. But what's a little murder amongst friends, right? So his whole idea was that the bourgeoisie exploited the proletariats for wealth. They stole, they took advantage. That's how they got their wealth. And again, I'm not talking about uber rich people, although they are in the bourgeoisie classification. He's talking about your middle class, people who own property. Your person today that might own a $300,000 home and a car, maybe two, okay? That's what he's talking about. He's not talking about the multi, you know, rich. Although, like I said, they are included in that class. He's talking about your common person who owns a home, okay? They stole from the working class, the peasants, if you will. That's the whole view here, okay? And he wanted to control the distribution of wealth and power. He didn't think the people who earned it, the bourgeoisie, earned it and deserved it. Okay? He thought everybody was, you know, equal footing in terms of their effort, their talents they bring to the party, and all that. And that's how he looked at it. Okay? Now, Marx had a couple of quotes I just want to kind of throw out. They had a lot of quotes, but here's some pertinent quotes that I want to kind of talk about. Religion is the opium of the people. One of the things that the Communist Manifesto and communism in general believe is that they are atheists and they don't want you to believe in a god or a religion. They want you to worship the state. So he said the religion is the opium of the people. That kind of got in his way. Just like today, our Constitution is getting in the way of the people who want to rule us, right? He had another very interesting quote. The only antidote to mental suffering is physical pain. How would you like that guy to be your leader? Okay. And by the way, the philosopher Nietzsche, who never really commented on the Communist Manifesto, he's a 19th century philosopher, but he did talk about communism, and he predicted, amongst other things, the rise of communism will bring the death of Christianity, okay, basically religion, and 100 million deaths. And this, he's way before his time. He never lived, I think he died in 1900, and he never really saw his prediction come true with Lenin, with Stalin, with Hitler, with Mao over in China. By the way, much more than 100 million deaths, okay? And other places too, I'm just naming a few. The last thing I want to bring up with Karl Marx's quote, the theory of communism can be summed up in a single sentence, the abolition of private property. Remember what communism is. Communism is the state owns everything, every means of production, every house, every car. The state owns everything. You own nothing. Okay. And it's right in the Communist Manifesto. If you choose to pick up that book and take a look at it, you'll find that quote in there. The abolition of private property is one of the tenets of one of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about what's going on today. I call it the soft totalitarianism in the West, okay? What do we do? Censorship. Social media suppresses dissenting views. You don't think that's happening or has happened? And Elon Musk taking over Twitter, it was a very clear thing that Twitter was actually doing that. And they have a right to do that as a social media platform, but not when the government is promoting that. That is a First Amendment violation, freedom of speech, when the government actually suppresses your speech. Remember, the First Amendment doesn't apply to my newspaper or your magazine or your podcast. It applies to the government, and the government was found to coerce and to work with social media platforms to censor. There was a cancel culture going on, and I have firsthand experience on that because when I ran for Congress in June of 2022, LinkedIn went back 9 months to find something I wrote about COVID, which, by the way, turned out to be true. I also wrote something else about the troops that President Trump provided Nancy Pelosi on January 6th, and she refused. That turned out to be true. As a matter of fact, she admitted it. So LinkedIn hadn't let me back on, but I was banned out of LinkedIn for 2 years. And they went back 9 months and hunted me down because I was running for Congress and they knew of my conservative views. So the cancel culture is a big deal. And by the way, cancel culture happens in a lot of other ways as well in businesses. Okay. Actors get canceled when they speak out against abortion. Okay. Executives get fired. Employees get fired. There's all kinds of things going on in what we call cancel culture. The big investment firms, okay, like Vanguard, okay, own so much of the stock. I think between them, State Street, and one other, they own over, you know, close to $30 trillion worth of equities. And if they call up a CEO and say, hey, by the way, if you don't subscribe to our ESG scores and our DEI mandates, we're going to sell your stock. And you as a mutual fund owner will never know that stock's going in your portfolio because your mutual fund probably contains thousands of stocks. But when there's a big dump by a shareholder that even owns 5% of your stock or 10, guess what? Your stock tanks and the CEO gets fired. Okay. So that's the blackmail that's going on. That's the cancel culture that's going on. Okay. And another way this soft approach is the thought police that's going on, especially in our institutions, in our colleges, in our private schools. I know somebody that goes to that went to a private school in Connecticut, very expensive boarding school. Okay. And matter of fact, I'll tell you what it was. It was Choate, where John F. Kennedy graduated after he got kicked out of Canterbury in Connecticut, in New Milford. He got kicked out for behavior. He went to Choate and finished his term out. A lot of famous people went to Choate. Choate has this whole thought police of what you can and can't say, words you can and can't use. Glastonbury High School had just put out a bunch of words, Glastonbury, Connecticut, a bunch of words that you can't use anymore. So the thought police is controlling language. And in some cases, like in Canada, they make it illegal if you don't call somebody by the right pronoun. In some European countries, if you criticize the government, it could be legalities. You can get arrested for criticizing the government. So all of this is going on now. Let's go back to John Adams. When the Alien Sedition Act was passed, one of the provisions of the Alien Sedition Act was that John Adams, who was kind of a big government guy at odds with Thomas Jefferson and Madison, said that in the code, in the law, it said that a journalist could be jailed if they criticized the government. That's what Adams wanted, okay? Well, Thomas Jefferson at the time, governor of Virginia, and Madison, I think he was governor of Kentucky, or maybe it was in Congress. I can't remember what his role was. Both of them said, no, we're going to nullify this. This is the first example in our country where the states actually nullified a federal law because it was unconstitutional. You can't nullify a law if you don't like it. If it's constitutional, you have to abide by it. That's a supremacy clause. We talk about that in previous episodes. But go to episode 6. I talk about nullification and how we have an obligation, especially our state representatives, have an obligation, not just a duty, but an obligation to nullify unconstitutional mandates from the federal government. And we do a lousy job at that. I don't care what state you're in. We don't push back enough. Okay. And so that was a First Amendment violation. And Jefferson and Madison said, nope, we ain't enforcing that. And by the way, that's unconstitutional. And it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court had to overrule that provision of the Alien Sedition Act. Okay. That's how it's supposed to work. Right. Okay. So the ideology of equity, everybody talks about equity. Remember, the preamble of our Constitution says all men are created equal, right? It doesn't guarantee equal outcome. It guarantees life, pursuit of happiness, right? Liberty, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It doesn't say everybody has to be equal. That's not the game. Matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson, if I get it right, he had a quote that said, there's nothing more unequal than the equal treatment of unequal people. Okay, so there you have it right from the horse's mouth, all right? But this whole ideology of equity is a ruse, if you will, in terms of implementing this whole communist class warfare, you know, what I call resentment-based politics. It's exactly what Karl Marx and Frederick Engels wrote about in the Communist Manifesto between the bourgeoisie and the proletariats. It's exactly what happened with Lenin, with Stalin, okay? The class warfare between Jews and non-Jews in Nazi Germany. The underlings over in, if you want to call them that, in China, where Mao exterminated millions and cleansed his society, according to him. Okay? You don't think that's going on today? That's exactly how they try to divide us. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But you've got this whole business about the oppressors and the oppressed. Think about it. Everywhere you look, there's a group fighting for something because they feel that they're oppressed. All right? So Nietzsche warned us about this. The philosopher Nietzsche warned us about resentment-based politics. When you look at the clowns that are doing this in politics today, mostly on the left, okay, rather than lift people up, they seek to tear down those they deemed privileged. Sound familiar? Sound like Karl Marx? And what they deem privilege is open to a lot of debate and in interpretation. Okay. But let me give you a couple of stories. I had a liberal person living in another country. She said to me one day, you know, Mark, the reason for your success is your white privilege. I swear to God. And, you know, the rich should be paying more in taxes. Really? My white privilege. I said, first of all, you know nothing about me, but does that mean that every white male? Oh, she said, I'm sorry, she said male white privilege. Let me correct that. Okay. Does that mean that every male white person in America is successful? I know a lot of white males that are not successful, pretty much on almost any spectrum of the scale. Okay. Well, that kind of blows your theory, because if you're white and male, and you're, that means you're privileged and you should all succeed, right? So I said, let me ask you a question. I said, depending on what group I put you in, you know, and you think you're oppressed, she had a child, she was divorced, and she had a minority child. I said, you know, are you teaching your daughter to be oppressed? Oh, I'm not doing that. You're not? First, you're telling me she's oppressed because she's a woman. And the other thing you're telling me is she's oppressed because she's black. Oh, I'm not doing anything of the sorts. Oh, okay. I'm glad to hear that, but it doesn't sound like it to me. But, you know, when you put people in boxes and in classifications, and then somehow make them the oppressors? How about if I said this? What are you talking to me on right now? I'm talking to you on an iPhone. Okay, I said, have you ever been to Chengdu, China? She says, no. I said, well, I have. And do you know that children are making that iPhone? I've seen them. I've seen the plants. I've seen this, the labor, the child labor that's being used to make the device that you're talking on. And the fact that you paid money to an Apple store for that device means that you're an oppressor. You supported child slavery. She says, oh, no, that's different, she says. It's always different, by the way. You ever notice that? It's always different. Okay. I said, no, come on. I just made you the oppressor. And by the way, why do you want to pay more taxes? What do you mean? Well, you just said the rich should pay more taxes. Well, I'm not rich. Well, wait a minute. I said the global income, the average global income is somewhere between, arguably, between $20,000 and $30,000 a year. You make more than that, don't you? Well, yeah, I do, but that's not what I'm talking about. Wait a minute. I just put you into a class that made you the oppressor. If you think making a lot of income is an oppressor, okay? So what section of society exactly are you trying to fix? Because it sounds to me like you're a pretty damn good oppressor yourself. Oh, no, that's different. That's not what I'm talking about. Yeah, but it is what I'm talking about. See, when you throw this stuff back to them, they really can't argue with you, except for saying, well, that's different. Or if they revert to calling you a name, like a racist or whatever else they're going to call you, some kind of phobe, you know you won the argument, okay? So this is what goes on here, guys, and this is how people are actually wired. Now, I'll tell you another story. I had a relative, out of the blue, he said to me, you know, your success, the reason for your success is you just got lucky. I just got lucky. Yeah. I go, well, what do you know about my success? What do you know about my work ethic? What do you know about what I've done? You know nothing. But I will agree with you, though. I did get lucky. You want to know why? I was born in the United States of America, just like you. So I am lucky. And you're lucky, too. But what's your excuse? Because he was not successful, okay? Although he thought he was the smartest guy in the room, really good at Trivia Pursuit. Maybe that's why he thought that was his claim to fame. Good luck with that. He couldn't get on Jeopardy after five tries. But you know, this is what goes on here. This class warfare, this resentment-based politics is driving this country apart. And it's all by design. So, you know, when I look at some of the overarching organizations and framework that's in place to do this, let's look at this. You know, Marx talked about controlling the media, controlling communications. What do you think is going on now with the media? Okay, 90% of it is liberal, pretty much in line with what we're talking about with this resentment-based politics. The central bank and the Federal Reserve controlling our economy is a big part of that. And if we go to digital currency, God bless us, because they'll control every aspect of our economy, more so than they are today. And they're controlling quite a bit of it right now, by the way. We did a couple episodes on the Federal Reserve if you want to go back and listen. Mass data collection, collecting more and more information on us, especially gun registrations, which are part and parcel to gun confiscation. Okay. National ID Act, which was enacted in 2005 and still not implemented because states are pushing back on it. Okay, because it is unconstitutional. And global institutions that have popped up, and there's hundreds of them. People like the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, John Kerry, Al Gore, Tim Cook from Apple, all idolized China. as the way to organize a country. And these are not my words. I have an whole episode on this. Go back. I forget which episode it is, but go back and take a look. And there's an episode that I did on this whole globalization and the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and what these yo-yos have said and how they have a disdain for capitalism and disdain because capitalism, like the Constitution, gets in their way of global control, okay? They're looking for global governance. The World Economic Forum, the WHO, the World Health Organization. Thank God President Trump pulled us out of that. He scolded the WEF. One of the first things he did in Congress, he presented to the World Economic Forum and basically scolded them, okay? The United Nations with a bunch of dictators in there. Nobody is marching in the United Nations to the tenets of the pledge of the United Nations, which is peaceful solutions, not war. Okay. They got more communists and dictators in that group than you could shake a stick at. And I hope President Trump pulls us out of the UN. There's absolutely zero value for us to be in it. Okay. Matter of fact, negative value. Okay. So remember, we had mass physical extermination, starting with Lenin, Stalin, Hitler, Mao, okay? And a lot of this was under the covers, and nobody knew what was going on. Matter of fact, in World War II, we were allies with Joseph Stalin. There's pictures of him and Churchill and FDR all up there shaking hands, making agreements, carving up Europe after the war was over. That's all. So many of those countries became communist Russian possessions or Soviet Union, okay? But we never learned about the millions that Stalin killed. We certainly learned about Hitler. But Stalin killed way more than Hitler did. And by the way, I'm not condoning what Hitler did. But we never learned this in school. We never learned Stalin was a mass murderer, okay? We didn't even know what was going on. Well, I should say we probably did know, but the public didn't know what was going on in the Nazi concentration camps until we liberated and defeated Hitler. Okay? Lenin, right? So you think about all the murder that happened. Well, once this all became known, the proponents of the Marxist agenda, of the intellectuals, especially in France, the intellectual elite had to back off a little bit and change their tactic. So their tactics changed to more subtle things like economic control, which is what I just talked about, social engineering. We'll talk about that in a minute. Digital suppression. Elimination of God. Go back to episode 41, where I talk about the separation of church and state and how that was misconstrued by a racist Marxist judge called Hugo Black in the 1940s, and how he miscombobulated, if you will, Thomas Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptists, who were concerned about being exiled from the state of Connecticut because Connecticut did not have a freedom of religion clause in their constitution. Well, the supremacy clause in the U.S. Constitution protected them, and that's what the letter was about from Jefferson to the Danbury Baptist, Danbury, Connecticut. Okay. And in that letter, he wrote the separation of church and state. Totally taken out of context by this idiot judge. And now the liberals, even today, are talking about the separation of church and state, which is why you see all kinds of cases about removing the Ten Commandments from courtrooms, taking down crosses off of hills that are honoring our war dead. You're looking at taking nativity scenes off the central square. You're looking at all this. The destruction of God, okay, is not by accident. The bringing down of religion and the bringing down of God in general is not by accident. It is part of the Communist Manifesto, where they want you to worship government, not some deity, not your God, not some religion. This is not by accident, guys, okay? This is not by accident. And if you go into episode 41, I talk in detail about this whole separation of church and state and how that got all misconstrued. And ignorant liberals today are still touting that as part of the Constitution. And I will put $1,000 down right now if you can go into the Constitution and find the words separation of church and state. It doesn't exist. Okay. Okay. Let's talk about more specifics, what's going on today. If you look at the way we're being divided by race, black versus white, Hispanic, Asians, okay, big attack on Asians, especially in our universities, okay, gender, male versus female. Males make more for the same job as females, which is totally false, and it's been proven false, but it doesn't matter, okay? Income and wealth. The rich don't pay their fair share, which is total bull. The top 1% pay 50% of the taxes in this country. The bottom 50% don't pay anything, okay? We even have something pretty cleverly named, the earned income tax credit. Earned income tax credit. Wait a minute. You didn't work. You don't have any income. And the government sends you a check. And that is called the earned income tax credit. What did you earn? Okay. This is what's going on, guys. Okay. Pitting wealth. And when they look at billionaires, how many people have heard, oh, Elon Musk. I was talking to a liberal not too long ago. Elon Musk doesn't pay any taxes. Really? Oh, geez. I'm sure he'd love to. Well, how much did you pay last year? I paid $50,000 in taxes. Oh, I'll bet you any money if I can get a hold of Elon, and I could probably figure out how to do that through my connections, he'd love to trade tax liabilities with you. What do you think we do that? It's a good deal for you. You're gonna pick up 50 grand, right? Oh, wait a minute, that's different. What do you mean it's different? You just said Elon Musk doesn't pay any taxes. I'm sure you'd like to trade places with him because you said what, 50? My God. Yeah. I'm sure Elon would love to have that conversation with you. No. That's not what I mean. Well, what do you mean? Okay. See, the whole argument falls apart. And somebody else say, these big companies like Amazon don't pay any income taxes. Really? I used to be a CFO. I'm an ex-finance guy. I pulled up their profit and loss statement. They pay in the billions in income taxes every year. So I said to this person, you know, somehow we got to get you in touch with Jeff Bezos. He's got to fire his tax attorneys, and they got to hire you because you somehow know he can pay zero taxes. And his tax attorneys, look at the money they're spending on taxes. I'm sure he'd love to have the conversation with you and hire you on the spot. What do you think about that? You think I should make that connection? Oh, no, that's not what I'm talking about. That's different. It's always different. It's always different, right? And then they change the subject, and they'll say something like, well, you know, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos spent their money going into space. You know, they should spend their money down here where it's needed. Really? Okay, so first of all the people that made the rocket ships that got them up into space didn't earn an income on that and didn't have a livelihood. Okay, I got all that. But you're telling these guys who employ thousands and thousands and thousands of people how to spend their money. Well, what about you? Are you taking that vacation to Disney World this year with your kids? I don't think you should do that. I think you should spend your money here on the impoverished in your own city. Don't take that vacation. That's different. It's always different. Okay, it's always different. So this class warfare is getting out of control. Okay, so they do it with the income, they do it with race, gender, income, wealth, sexual preference. Here we go. Transgenders, gays, LGBTQ, XYZ. I'm losing track of the letters. We're going to run out of letters pretty soon. They keep adding letters onto this. Okay, and they pit people against you know, you don't have, gay people don't have rights. They don't. They're U.S. citizens. They have the same rights I have. Okay. The whole notion of tearing down the fabric of the family is all about this whole transgender movement. And, you know, I personally think transgenders are ill and need help, not to be celebrated. I was on Facebook not too long ago, and one of my wife's relatives had a picture of her daughter, 7 or 8 years old, with dollar bills in her hand, stuffing dollar bills into the pants of a drag queen. And for those of you in Rio Linda, the drag queen is male, dressed as a woman. Okay. Now let's back up on this one for a minute. How is it that a grown man looks forward to dressing up as a woman and parading and dancing in front of little kids? Does anybody see anything wrong with that? So my question would be, and my wife told me to shut my big mouth, my question would be this. Would you allow any one of those people along with your daughter over the weekend to babysit your daughter while you're gone for the weekend? And many would come back and say, oh, of course I would. Well, okay, good luck with that. Okay, lots of luck. Or they would say, that's different. Here we go again, right? That's different. Okay. This is what we're talking about, breaking down the fabric of the family and pitting this whole gender thing. There are so many genders. You look at how many genders they say we have, and a man can have a baby, and I mean, you just go on and on ad nauseum. But it's all, they could give a rat's ass about transgenders or gays or minorities or women for that matter. We saw that already when these people are also supporting men playing in women's sports. Okay. So once you start looking through the actions, it's pretty clear what this is all about. Okay. They could give a rat's ass about this. This is all about division and pitting us against each other. Okay. That's really what they're looking. Now, everybody says, well, you know, Joe Biden was the worst president since Jimmy Carter. And albeit, yeah, he was a terrible president. But I think the president, besides Woodrow Wilson, besides him, who did the most damage to this country, and boy, there's a lot of other candidates we could talk about, FDR and a lot of others. But the president that did the most damage, in my opinion, is Barack Obama, a community organizer with zero experience in business and very little in politics. He was a state senator and then became a senator. Okay. Obama, a community organizer, doesn't make money when people get along. Think about that. They don't make money when people get along and groups cooperate. Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Farrakhan, these people don't make any money when people get along. They make money when they're divided. They make money when they're at each other's throats, at rallies, at riots and protests. That's where they make their money, okay? And I think Barack Obama set this company back, sent this country back decades in the race department, stating that race was, and everything today you talk about is all, most of it's about race, okay? You're racist if you don't agree with me. On my idea of equity, you're a racist, okay? How many times do you hear that moniker being thrown around? And Obama, I think, set us back. Now, the thing that people sometimes don't connect is, if we're such a racist country, how the hell did this guy get elected president? I mean, that's the question I always had. Twice. And he wouldn't have done it without the white vote, because the white vote represents 60, 70% of the voting bloc. So how the hell is it that we're so damn racist if we elected a black president? And before that, we've elected black mayors and black governors and black congressmen and senators. I mean, go down the list, okay? How the heck could that be? Has anybody put two and two together there and try to figure that out? So this community organizer, he rekindled the divide that many people say, and I agree, was disappearing in America in terms of the racial divide. And I think he fueled it. I think it's worse now than it's been in 30, 40 years. And oh yeah, by the way, that's just the way he wants it. That's just the way he wants it. When you get people like Oprah Winfrey, who is a multi-billionaire, maybe the richest woman in the world, I don't know, I don't keep track of that, who talks about how she was oppressed as a black woman. And she had one time, I don't know, there were like 9 or 10 people on a screen. All these are accomplished people, Pulitzer Prize winners, presidents of universities, deans, publishers, go down the list, politicians, all black, all talking about how they're oppressed. I'm thinking, wait a minute now. If you were oppressed, you wouldn't be on that screen, including Oprah. You have Stevie Wonder saying, I'm going to move to Ghana because it's freer there. After he made his billions, by the way, I just saw he's selling a home in Los Angeles for $15 million. Hey, Stevie, more power to you. I don't begrudge you at all. I loved your music. Matter of fact, I went to one of your concerts once. I think it was one of the best concerts I ever been to. But Stevie, wake up, man. Okay? Wake up. Oprah, Stevie, you never would have done what you did in any other country in the world. Name one. Name one country. Name one country. If Oprah went over to Japan to try to run for office, how do you think that would work? Or Kamala Harris, for that matter, or any person of color. Go to France. Go to England. Go to some of these countries that you are lauding as free and open. Okay? But what happened was Obama rekindled the whole race thing. And a little personal story with Obama. My son, you probably know, my son got killed in Afghanistan in 2010 when Obama was the commander-in-chief. We got a form letter from Obama with a robo-computer-generated signature. And how do I know that? We compared his signature to other Gold Star families with a similar letter, and they were identical copies of the signature. So they were the, what do they call it, robo-signatures or whatever it is. So we got a form letter, but we didn't get any phone call. No phone call from the commander-in-chief when our son got killed under his watch, okay? But remember who did get a phone call? The Terror of Ferguson, Michael Brown's mother, got a phone call from Obama expressing his condolences over Michael Brown, who tried to take the gun away from the police officer, got shot and killed in the meantime doing it. And that whole thing was blown out of proportion by the media, right? Like he had his hands up and he was shot in cold blood. No, that didn't happen. And minutes later, he accosted an older woman in a convenience store. This is Michael Brown. And Obama said, if I had a son, he'd be a guy like Michael Brown. I'd model my son after Michael Brown, okay? Not my son or some other son who fought for our country and died defending our freedoms. We didn't get a phone call, okay? So you see what's going on here, right? It's when you start putting the pieces together, it's pretty easy to see. And by the way, President Trump, 9 years later, called us into the White House, and we visited him and Melania with other Gold Star families. He had a big ceremony for us. It was outrageous in terms of what he did for us. No press, zero press on this at all. And he had a big ceremony for us and honored us. And he and Melania and all the top brass, even Vice President Pence and all the top brass, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and all that, they all were there for 3 hours with us. 3 hours, okay? The most important man in the world was with us for 3 hours, honoring my son and my family, okay? And it got no press at all. Did not make the news. He didn't publicize it. And he did that every year. Every year he did that, okay? These are the things you don't hear about President Trump, okay? President Obama, to me, was evil. And he knew exactly what he was doing, okay? And boy, he was slick. He had a great way of speaking, a great way of words. He was a great politician, like Bill Clinton. Phenomenal politician. Phenomenal. It's just too bad that he wasn't fighting for the people. Okay. So let's end this. I'm going to end this with a couple questions I want you to think about. Is this whole resentment-based politics that's going on today designed to keep the focus off of government? And do you think you're being oppressed by government? Before you answer that, think about the taxes that you pay, the regulations you have to abide by, the freedoms that are not afforded to you, that our founders say were afforded to you, okay? And by the way, this is only not only at the federal level, but at the state and local levels as well, okay? Why do we have all these different gun laws when the Second Amendment is clear? Shall not be infringed. Because we allow our state representatives to pass these inane gun laws from state to state that suppress our freedoms. I mean, geez, I don't know why I have to apply to the government to exercise my right to carry a firearm. I don't know why I have to, I don't apply to the government for free speech. The First Amendment, okay? But we do it to ourselves. We don't know our rights, which is why I'm doing this podcast. We don't know our rights. We allow the state representatives to walk all over us. And before we know it, we're no different than any other communist country if this keeps up. Okay? Because we're not informed. And it's our duty to be informed. It's our duty as a people to be informed and to hold our government accountable. Okay? So the first question I have is the resentment-based politics designed to keep the focus off of government? I got asked a question when I ran for Congress. They asked me, Mark, how do we know we can trust you? And my answer was, why the hell would you trust a politician? What's wrong with you? Problem is we're trusting too many people. I don't care who's in office. We're trusting too much in our government. Our job is to hold the government accountable, to make sure they're not infringing on our freedoms. The whole reason for the Constitution is not only to protect us from enemies, foreign and domestic, but to protect our rights as citizens, our inalienable and our enumerated rights. That's the role of government. The Constitution is there. The government doesn't grant us our rights, okay? They come from God or they're enumerated from the people. And the Constitution is there to protect us. The role of government is to make sure our rights are not infringed. And our rights are infringed every single day at all different levels of government. And I talk a lot about this in all the different various episodes that you can go back and listen to. The last question I want you to think about is, who are the real oppressors? Think about that. Who are the real oppressors? I'll leave you with that. This episode, how they divide us, you know, they tie back to the Marxist Communist Manifesto, how they divide us, the Marxist art of resentment-based politics. Take a look around you It's going on right now as we speak. All you got to do is turn on the news and you'll see what I mean. Okay? Episode 45. Until next time, I'm Mark DeLuzio. God bless. Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God. The Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems. Other episodes can be found on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Rumble, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other podcast platforms. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio. Until next time, may God bless you, may God bless America, and may America bless God.